This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joined by Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch, Moline, Rock Island, and Bob Sector, my recently retired colleague, member of the Chicago Tribune's political team. And on the phone is Robin Johnson, a Monmouth College professor and political strategist and host of Talking Politics on KBUR AM 1490 in Burlington, Iowa, and Matt Strawn, former Iowa Republican chairman and founding principal of Next Generation Public Affairs. Gentlemen, thank you all for getting up with me this morning as we count down the time to the Iowa caucuses. And I want to start first with Matt, who's on the ground in Des Moines. And during our newscast, Susan Berkus had the latest weather forecast for Iowa coming in. And in fact, our Mike Hamernick had it looked like a blizzard watch already being posted in some parts of Iowa. How big is weather a factor for the caucuses?
Well, good morning from Des Moines. And yeah, I was amused last night at a number of get-togethers around town where the only people worried about the weather seem to be the reporters from D.C. and New York that didn't understand that we're Iowans. This isn't a big deal for us. We, you know, we own a pair of boots. We own gloves. It's okay. So it really isn't that much of a concern. And the latest reports I've seen, most of the weather won't start hitting until late evening, most likely after we've wrapped up voting at our caucus sites.
So if you were talking about the concerns of D.C. and New York-based reporters, you must have been at the 801 Chop House last night.
I was, right after the unveiling of the Iowa polls. So it was, and then the other thing that amuses me is most of them are also worried about trying to get out of town Tuesday morning and make their way to New Hampshire. So that seems to be driving a lot of the discussion here is whether they will be, quote-unquote, stuck in Iowa for an extra day.
Hey, there are worse things in life, believe
exactly.
Me. I mean, that's ridiculous. Well, you touched on the Iowa poll, the Des Moines Register poll. Ann Seltzer, who's the great pollster for the Register. And I just want to go over the numbers here. In the Republican side, Donald Trump, 28, Ted Cruz, 23, Marco Rubio, 15, Ben Carson, 10, Rand Paul, 5, Chris Christie, 3, and then all at 2 are Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, Mike Huckabee, John Kasich, Rick Santorum, uncommitted, 3% are not sure. That's the Republican side. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton, 45, Bernie Sanders, 42, Martin O'Malley, 3, uncommitted, 4, and not sure, 5. Robin Johnson, what do you make of the Trump factor in Iowa? I know you just recently spoke to him on your radio show.
Yeah, I think, I interviewed Sam Clovis last summer in June, and Sam is a conservative activist in Iowa, and he talked about the anger at the Republican base. And when I asked him about Trump, he said if Trump gets in, he thought it would be a great thing, and that he would drive the debate, and he certainly has. I think he speaks for a lot of the working class vote. His support is highest among those folks without college degrees, people who feel that they've been left behind in the new economy and are very concerned about terrorist attacks. When I had him on his show, Rick, quite frankly, some of the things he talked about, I asked him about trade and about relations with China. His answers were those that could have come right out of Bernie Sanders' speeches. I think one thing that maybe hasn't been discussed enough is that will he attract some Democratic and union support? I've seen polls that suggest some of that. It may not be now in the primaries, but it could certainly be next fall if he's on the ballot as a Republican nominee or perhaps as an independent.
Well, Bob Sector, we started the show off this morning noting, of course, that Donald Trump did not take part in that last Republican debate and even played a cut from Trump at the veterans benefit that he held as counter-programming, where he said, I don't know what the hell if it's going to hurt me or not. What do you think?
Well, you got to remember or try to parse why he did this. And I know the excuse was that it was Fox News and Megyn Kelly being nasty to him. But there was a strategic reason behind it. This way he gets more attention and he draws attention away from the other debate. He had nothing to gain from being in that last debate. He would have been pilloried by the other candidates. And despite what he says, his debate performances haven't been that great.
He's won every online
yes,
poll.
Yes, I know. I don't know if you know this, Rick.
Yeah.
But he says a lot of stuff that just is kind of not true.
Really?
Yeah. There's clearly we've talked about this before, in this post-factual world that we're in, you know, there's a disconnect between what people say on the campaign trail and facts, truth, logic, whatever. And, you know, and Trump and Cruz to some extent really, really epitomize that. And, you know, what the thing that I
okay, get it off your chest.
Oh, right? No, the thing that was so amazing to me, that this whole ginned up phony controversy about Fox News was there's an irony to a literary irony to it. You've got Donald Trump attacking, having a fight with Fox News because they were not nice to him and not fair, and Fox News being the aggrieved party here, or Donald Trump being the aggrieved party, depending the way you look at it. And here's this news organization, which really isn't a news organization. It's a spin machine that gins up controversy, and the two of them are fighting with each other. It's kind of hilarious.
It kind of reminded me a bit like Rob Blagojevich making Dick Knell a sympathetic
figure
in some respects. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses with our roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Joining me are Roger Ruthart, Robin Johnson, Matt Strawn, and Bob Sector as we spend this hour talking about tomorrow's Iowa caucuses. And Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch, I wanted to ask you about the advertising. I had Amanda Vinicky, my friend from Illinois Public Radio, on, and she mentioned about traveling through western and northwestern Illinois. And she said all it takes is a couple hours of watching television and you've had your fill of advertising.
Yeah, I mean it's mind-numbing. You can see the same ad six times in 1 hour, and often back to back to back. You know,
the same ad.
Well, maybe with some other candidates ad in between, but you can get like four ads in a row, and they're all campaign ads. And it's great for the media, I'm sure, in our area. I mean, the Quad Cities is a large media market. It covers western Illinois and eastern Iowa, and several years ago, I guess it must have been 4 years ago now, we our newspaper did a story on looking how much campaign money was spent in that market, and it was over $22 million, as I recall. So,
and that was 4 years ago, and that was just one party.
Yeah, I mean, well, there was a heavy Senate race with Joni Ernst in Iowa,
right?
And there was the Republican or the gubernatorial thing going on in Illinois and all that, but. When you're one of us who is left behind after everybody leaves after the caucuses, you know, it's interesting because you look at it from a totally different perspective. I think it was it Chuck Todd who compared the caucuses to athletics, you know, the sporting event. And really for Iowa, I think every 4 years, it's like having the Super Bowl in the state.
Well, on that point, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yeah, good morning, Rick. You know, I read a poll recently, and it's stated that 50% of the people think that Iowa now has maybe undue, you know, influence with this early election. And it could be also because the demographics do not necessarily represent the demographics of the country. But also, I know we saw what it did for Barack Obama, but there's also been candidates who won that caucus and went on not to win the nomination. But just overall, where do they think people's feelings are with that, and would there ever be any changes with the caucus to start this early? Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Ron. And let me start with Matt, because as a former party chairman, you know, and no doubt that question consistently comes up about, does Iowa have too much undue influence? And just from my point of view, I always appreciated Iowa because of what was then the retail nature of campaigning, although that now seems to be going bye-bye. Matt?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there, but Ron, and you put your finger on part of my answer already when it comes to the demographics of the state. I think even as a Republican chairman, the fact that the Democrats elevated somebody like Barack Obama 8 years ago in the state, you know, I think illustrates the, you know, just because somebody may not look like a large majority of Iowans doesn't mean we're not willing to consider them. So, you know, I don't buy the demographic arguments. On the Republican side, the Iowa Republican Party is exactly a window into what the National Party is going through at that particular time. I saw it 4 years ago when I was party chairman, where even on caucus night when we had effectively a tie between the establishment wing of the party, the movement conservative wing of the party, and then coming up very quickly in the rearview mirror, in third place was the ascendant libertarian-oriented piece of the Republican Party. And I think what you're seeing 4 years later today is, again, and pretty accurate reflection of where the National Republican Party is right now, an establishment that is gasping for air and is kind of on its back trying to figure out what in the world is actually going on, an anti-establishment fervor and some degree of coalescing with more libertarian and movement conservative anti-establishment types. And then, of course, we've got this Trump-sized factor looming out there that we're all probably going to learn together Monday night whether this is something that we've just all enjoyed as entertainment over the last 12 months, or if there really is some currency with new people in the process who will actually show up and vote. Because, and Rick knows this, and your smart listeners who've been listening to us talk for a year know that this isn't a process where you just go in over your lunch hour and throw in a vote and go about your day. It requires a commitment. So if Trump can crack that code in voter turnout in a place like Iowa, it's going to be tough to stop him going forward.
Robin Johnson, when we talk about Iowa and the caucuses, and a lot, I think there's kind of a national perception that somehow this is about picking a winner, when we know that it's more of a winnowing process that Iowa actually plays than necessarily picking a winner.
Yeah, I think the Democrats have been a little more successful in predicting winners than Republicans historically. But you go to New Hampshire next, which seems to have an honorary streak to purposely vote against whoever Iowa votes for. So, you'll go from Iowa to New Hampshire, which are two somewhat similar states in a lot of ways regarding diversity. Iowa, on the religious end, has more evangelicals, while New Hampshire's more secular. But then you go to South Carolina, which is totally different, and then Nevada, and then you'll break out into other states across the South, and then you'll come up to the Midwest in March and April. So it is a winnowing process. I don't see where on the Republican side you may have five or six be viable going into New Hampshire after Iowa. But, you know, it's funny, every 4 years we have this hand-wringing over Iowa, if it should start out or not. And having participated in this process fully here, I think it's got to start somewhere, and Iowa's as good a place as anybody. The people here are good citizens. They take this seriously, and I think and the fact that one important statistic to keep in mind is that around, 30 to 40% make up their mind in the last week, so this thing could still change here in the next 24 hours.
Well, Roger Ruthart, you've seen the process before. There was used to be the old kind of adage that there's three tickets out of Iowa. But given the size of this field, given the ability of super PACs to kind of keep campaigns resuscitated in a way, although, you know, that's been an up and down kind of issue this year. But I see a lot more than three tickets on the Republican side coming out of Iowa.
Well, I think you have to look at, especially in years like this where you have no incumbent president running for re-election. I mean, you look back in history. Well, 4 years ago, I think Rick Santorum was the largest vote getter in Iowa, and it didn't do much for him. And the time before that was Mike Huckabee. And you go all the way back to the first time that Bill Clinton ran. Bill Clinton in Iowa got 3% of the vote, and I think finished fourth or fifth. So especially in those years where you were Everybody comes out of the woodwork and it's open season. I think it's a little bit different than it is some of the other years, but it certainly is a winnowing process, I think. The other thing that people don't tend to remember because of all the national media coverage ignores it, but this is a presidential primary system, and we're electing delegates. The total number vote doesn't necessarily matter as much as who's, you know, this is the beginning of the trail of collecting delegates to go to the convention in the summer. So there's been cases where the person who actually won the popular vote didn't actually win as many delegates as someone else. So there's a lot of balls in the air to watch at one time, I think, and everybody's going to have a different take coming out of here. But I think another key is, I think, look at which candidates are going to have the staying power when they come out of these early primaries. Which ones can afford to go all the way through, 50 states? Which ones have the organization? And which ones are just in there with a hope and a prayer that, if I do well in Iowa or New Hampshire, someone's going to come in and give me an organization and give me a checkbook to help me make it through the rest of the race.
This is our political roundtable on the Iowa caucuses tomorrow. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. We'll continue our discussion on tomorrow's Iowa caucuses with our political roundtable.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin and our special pre-caucus eve roundtable. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio, Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch, Moline Rock Island, and Bob Sector, recently retired from the Tribune's political team. On the phone is Robin Johnson, Monmouth College professor and political strategist and host of Talking Politics on KBUR in Burlington, Iowa. And in Des Moines, we've got Matt Strawn, former Iowa Republican chairman and founding principal of Next Generation Public Affairs. Bob, I wanted to turn to you. We've talked about Republicans, the question of the Trump factor, those kinds of things. But, when you look at this latest Iowa poll, Hillary Clinton 45, Bernie Sanders 42, roughly the margin of error here. What's going on here? I mean, we all remember 2008, and, right. She was the prohibitive favorite going into Iowa, and of course, Barack Obama won. John Edwards narrowly edged her out for second place. Everybody thought this was going to be kind of the reboot, the restart, the new Hillary.
Yeah, she's been around forever is part of the problem, and she's, she is a more traditional politician, and this is the year that you can, being a little edgy, being, a non-traditional politician actually gets you points.
The outsider.
Being the outsider gets you points. You see it on the Republican side, and you see it on the Democratic side, at least with Bernie Sanders. I don't think Martin O'Malley's got much traction. But, so O'Malley, it's kind of a strange analogy, but he's the bright, new, shiny object here. Sanders. And he's saying things, to some extent that are sort of the mere opposite of what the Republicans are saying. He's saying, I'm going to give you free college and we're going to have health care for all, things that are, and he's not saying how he's going to pay for much of this, but unless he's going to raise taxes dramatically. But he's appealing to a group of people who, again, aren't really they're not picking through this stuff and thinking, well, okay, that sounds great, but how are we going to pay for it? How is this ever going to get through Congress? I mean, they're not making those kind of calculations. Hillary Clinton, it's more boring, it's more pedantic, I guess, but she's saying, look, you have to have ideals, but you have to be realistic about them, and that's not as sexy, that's not as exciting a message.
Robin Johnson, a form of truth and consequences?
Yeah, I think the key is going to be just obviously turnout on this. And Sanders is appealing to people that don't traditionally get out and participate in caucuses, those that have never participated before, independents and young people. And he's got I forgot the catchphrase, is it, but go home for Bernie, something where they're going to bus people from college campuses to their homes to caucus there, because the critical thing is to have organization throughout the state. And that's where those rural areas, that's where that could give Clinton the advantage in defeating Sanders, is Sanders' support to some degree will be based in especially in three counties in Iowa that have college campuses, Blackhawk, Story, and Johnson. So it'll be interesting to see if Sanders succeeds there. The big the question is turnout and whether he can duplicate what Obama was able to do back in 2008, which I don't think so. You know, all the polls and all the TV, I actually talked to several Trump and Sanders supporters, and you just get the feeling they come up to me and ask me, well, have you been to a caucus? And I have observed them. I'm not an Iowan, so I haven't actually participated in one, but they're asking me questions, and I just get the sense from talking to them, and this isn't scientific, it's just anecdotal, that there's a measure of trepidation, that they don't know what to expect, and I think ultimately that may hold down the turnout of these folks and maybe give the edge to Clinton and Cruz tomorrow night.
Matt, what are you picking up as far as turnout on the ground there?
Yeah, and speaking on the Republican side, which is a much simpler process, the difference for your listeners between the Republican caucuses and the Democratic caucuses here, ours is a simple secret ballot, and our ballot is we're literally handed a blank slip of paper and we write a name on it, drop it in a box, and it's counted there in front of the room. And the totals of 1,681 precincts across the state are aggregated, and boom, there are your final results. Of course, the Democrats, it's not a secret ballot. You have to stand in preference groups. You have to have a 15% viability threshold to be eligible to receive delegates. So when Robin talks about the importance of an organization across the state with the Democrats, that's crucial, because Bernie Sanders can put 3,500 people in a building in Iowa City in the heart of the University of Iowa campus, but that precinct still may only have six delegates at the end of the day, as opposed to little dotted rural Iowa precincts that may have one or two here and there. So Clinton certainly has an advantage in that regard. But with the Trump factor, which is so fascinating here, and I know Robin knows when Donald Trump was down in a place like Burlington, Iowa, which had about 600 Iowa Republicans caucus 4 years ago, there were 4,000 people that showed up at Donald Trump's events there. And even extracting, the folks that crossed over from the border, if Donald Trump is turning out even a sliver of these new people coming to his events, he can dramatically remake the caucus electorate. So the number I would watch on turnout, we had 121,000 4 years ago when I was chair. Ted Cruz's support, those folks turn out every 4 years like it's their job. That's the core of his support. So the higher that number climbs above 121, the closer we get to 135,000, 140,000, the more likely it is that Donald Trump is having an excellent night on February 1st.
Well, Roger, that kind of leads to that fundamental question that I think a lot of people have been asking all along, but I also think it holds true not just with Donald Trump, but also with Bernie Sanders, is, how much of it is the let's just go see him versus to actually show up and go through the ritual that's involved for a caucus?
Well, and that's one thing I think you have to keep in mind when you look at some of these appearances that they've made. I mean,
both sides, Trump as well as Sanders, it's all about the crowd count,
It is, but I think in part of this in campaign is that there are places you can go where there's 100 or 200 people and you can actually get as close as you or I are and maybe be able to ask a question or two and get a sense of whether you really like this guy and agree with him or not. But then there's from our part of the state, the biggest turnouts have been for Bernie Sanders. And you go, well, let's see, are those people that voluntarily came there, were they bussed in? Are they campaign workers or paid, the senior citizens that are coming in for a meal, or just, what is this? And one other thing I think that's important from what we've seen, an important asset that Hillary has that I haven't seen anybody else have, and that's the ability to trot Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton out there. Chelsea made an appearance on behalf of her mother in Davenport. They had to move it to the baseball stadium because there were so many people that wanted to come here. Chelsea, I mean, she's appealing, I think, to that young voter base too in some ways. And Bill, regardless of what you want to say about him, I think he's an asset as her spouse. These other candidates don't have a spouse that's good that they can run out there and have 1,000 people show up just because Bill Clinton's in town.
But is Bill Clinton still
just like Trump? I mean, it's the celebrity factor.
Well, and but that goes to the same question I asked Roger. How much of this is the celebrity, the entertainment factor? And this kind of goes to what I kind of launched the conversation about Iowa about, was that to me it looks like the era of that kind of retail campaigning, Roger, that you were talking about, you know, going to Pella and the coffee shops and those kinds of, it now just seems to have been replaced, because this is the era for a number of these candidates, not all, but for a number of these candidates, that's a bygone time, and that it's all about packing as many people as you can into a room rather than do the meet and greet, Bob.
Yeah, and you know, it is a shame because you know, I think Roger said something about how this is the Super Bowl for
absolutely.
Yeah, that's. But some of us think of it more like spring training for campaigns, and they these candidates get their historically have gotten their first taste of how to interact with people, interact with voters on a one-on-one basis, and some of those personal interactions are very telling about who they are. Has Trump done any of that? I doubt it.
No, I'm not aware of it.
Yeah.
Rick, I was going to say that there's the really interesting thing here for us political scientists is, you know, there's more on at stake here than just who wins and loses. A lot of long-held assumptions about campaigning in Iowa are at stake as well. Do you have to do the retail politics? Trump certainly hasn't done that. He's focused on Twitter, on these statements. He's dominated the news coverage from day one. He's had rallies, not the little town meetings, but rallies. And he's called in the news shows, and the media has put him on and repeated it. It's always been said you have to support ethanol subsidies in Iowa. Ted Cruz opposes those, makes that a major part of his campaign plank. We'll see if he's able to succeed. And then the role of money in super PACs. You know, Jeb Bush got out to a huge lead in fundraising early, and his super PAC's blown through, what, $40 million? And he's at, what, 2 or 3% in the polls? So there's a lot of assumptions being tested here on campaigning in Iowa that I think are going to be very interesting when we do the post-analysis.
We're talking about the Iowa caucuses with our special political caucus eve roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson on Iowa caucus eve with our political roundtable. And kind of using what Robin Johnson from Monmouth College said as kind of a base about how this caucus could challenge a lot of our assumptions from having seen caucuses before, even challenge perhaps some of our assumptions on polling that's being done. And you know, kind of this era of conversion from telephone to internet, the digital age, that kind of thing. But I want each of you in the time we have left to give us some predictions here. And I don't, as I tell everybody, people ask me for predictions, and I say, if you want predictions, ask Tom Skilling. He gets paid a heck of a lot more than I do. But Robin, let's start with you. What do you think is going to come out of this? Robin? Okay, I guess we dropped Robin for just a moment. We'll get back to him. Roger?
Well, I think what I'm looking for, I'm interested in seeing how well Bernie Sanders can do in getting the turnout. I think that's a big issue. The Clintons, they've done this before, so I think their organization will be in place and get people to the caucuses. But Bernie will do well if he can turn his people out. So I give the edge, a slight edge to Hillary Clinton, and a bigger edge if she does a better job of getting her people out to the caucuses. On the Republican side, I think what I'm watching there is you had a Republican governor, long-term governor in Iowa, who came out and said don't vote for Cruz because he opposes ethanol. And so there's an interesting balance there about among the farm community, I think, whether the more religious right is going to support him for that reason, or they're going to oppose him because he wants to kill their main export.
All right, Robin, we're back with Robin Johnson. Robin, prediction time.
You probably thought I was trying to duck that question.
Yes, I did. Yes. I know you so well.
When predicting elections, I go back to fundamentals, and the fundamentals go back to the ground game. And I think Clinton has an advantage because they got a head start. They've got some very seasoned veterans. Even the Sanders people admit that the Clinton ground game is probably superior. I think Clinton wins, but I think it's within 5 points. The Republican race is tougher. Cruz has the solid, committed folks at the grassroots level. I'll take Cruz on that basis, but I'm not going to be surprised if Trump pulls it off.
All right, Matt Strawn.
Yeah, I'll take the other half of that bet, Robin. some of the same thoughts. I think it's going to be really close. The trend lines for Cruz have not been good over the last week and a half. Not just the attacks from Governor Branstad in the renewable fuels industry, but he's taking fire from Rubio, who is trying to finish a strong third. He's taking fire, of course, from Trump. And you know, those of us that have been around this business, at this point in the process, if you're trying to maintain just what you have instead of trying to grow your vote and raise your ceiling, that's not a good place to be in, even though without question he has the strongest organization. So I'm going to give a slight edge to Trump going into caucus night, that these new people will turn out. Don't know how many, but it'll probably be fairly close, but I give the edge to Trump, and I would give the edge to Hillary Clinton on the basis of a statewide deep organization.
Matt, just an addendum. Is a third place good enough for Marco Rubio?
Boy, a strong third place. He needs to perform a little better than the numbers we saw in the Iowa poll. And it's just astonishing to see the collapse of what we would call our center-right, more establishment vote in that Iowa poll with Christie at 3%, Bush at 2%, Kasich at 2%. It's going to be difficult for Rubio to get the kind of lift he needs to really finish a strong, strong third.
Bob Sucker.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think in a month from now, you're going to look at Iowa and say, what was that all about? I mean, it's that traditionally has been the case. It's just, you know, there's all this hoo-ha and to and fro and screaming and yelling, and it produces great headlines. But
sounds like the Tribune newsroom.
Yeah. Yes. But it, you know, in the end, it, you know, reality sets in at some point, and this is, you know, the race is going to be decided elsewhere other than Iowa. It might be a little winnowing, but in the end, what happened in Iowa will probably not matter that much.
Well, let me just ask you this, and Matt kind of touched on this too about the center-right establishment candidates. Is it a matter, do you think, that, you know, this is one where the establishment is looking down the road for turning back Trump?
I think they're praying down the road. I mean, more than anything else. Yeah, where that is, I'm not quite sure. You go on to New Hampshire, and you know, perhaps I don't know what the poll numbers are up there. That's a more traditional primary, but. And then you go down south, and if Cruz is still a factor, that still could be a problem for the party. But, you know, the party is turning ever more rightward, and that's where the base is. So I don't know if the establishment can stop him or not, or can stop Cruz if he takes off.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking part in our roundtable this morning. I appreciate it. I know that the listeners learned a lot about the caucuses, and it's going to be a very interesting Monday. Thanks again for joining me this morning. We'll be back with more right after this.